back to another episode of the Art Scene Podcast. Sorry it's been a few weeks since I posted an episode, but no worries. I have some cool guests lined up for the next couple months. So for today's episode, I decided to bring back a previous guest, Nando Alvarez Perez. I went over to his place to catch up and talk about the Material Art Fair in Mexico City this past February. He recently had work included in the fair, and so you'll get to hear Nando talk more about it and his experience hanging out in Mexico's capital city. He also shared his thoughts on his own craft as well as the photographic medium. Now, here's our conversation. All right, man. So it's good to have you here. It's good to be here.
My pleasure.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before for a while about having you back on the podcast, and mainly because every time I see you, we end up talking about photography, which is the medium that you chose to practice. And every time I get you going, you just end up saying a lot of stuff that I just learn about, and I enjoy your opinions.
I hope you find it educational. Because sometimes I feel like I'm just kvetching.
Right. And, you know, and I keep telling you, sometimes you say stuff and I'm like, we got to get it on a podcast. Oh, because we have to record this.
Is that why you're here?
Yeah.
Should be recorded for posterity's sake.
So here we are. But first I wanted to ask, how's it going? I think the last time I saw you, we hung out, I think you just got back from Mexico, from Mexico City, because you had work over at the Material Art Fair. Mm-hmm. How did that go? How was Mexico City?
Mexico City was absolutely incredible. I had a less than stellar time there because I was sick the entire time.
Are you serious?
Yeah. But, and not even like ate bad food. It was just like, got off the plane and was just gnarly, gnarly cold. But, and yeah, that and the altitude was just like a bad mix. But if you have not been there, it is an absolutely incredible place. It feels glib comparison, but it feels more European than I expected, but meets kind of like LA.
Sure.
This gigantic sprawl and this old meets new thing. It's just like, it's, yeah.
I've never been to Mexico City myself, and my mother grew up in Tijuana.
Yeah.
But a majority of our family is actually in Guadalajara.
Okay.
So we've been there a couple times and visited that family. We've been to Guanajuato, but you get that same feeling in Guadalajara. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's the old, you know, mixed with the new, and a lot of, you know, and they have the plaza with everything, all the old buildings, and a lot of Diego Rivera paintings, of course.
Yeah. And just like the art stuff that is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so like the like fair was awesome, but like, you know, you do a couple days of contemporary art before you're a little burnt out, and like
and then you go see the old stuff.
Yeah and then it's just like, holy shit, like this is why we're here, this is like what the work is for. And it's just like, it's so amazing to see work that's just like so much more tied into life and belief and faith, and aesthetics are all like one thing instead of a fair where it's just like this like really hard scrabbled for work that just sometimes seems very insular and not connected to.
What kind of work was did you see at the art fair?
There's Material, which is like way cool, hip, very low key, and Zona Mako, which is the kind of like Art Basel of the Latin American world. And that kind of sums it up. Like, once you're in the Zona Mako space, it feels like you're in Art Basel, Miami, or any giant global art fair. Material feels way more unique to the kind of like local vibe. That being said, there was a good amount of local art involved in the fair. It's run by two galleries there that own a gallery as well. But there's not a ton of the local art world being represented there.
Yeah.
And so then there was a third kind of like offshoot, tinier fair that was all local artists. And yeah, I didn't get to that one. But
so you, how many? You had one piece in the fair, right?
I had a booth.
A booth.
With City Limits Gallery. And it was a project space booth, which in like fair language is a very vague way to say that you'll apply, it'll cost less. We don't know exactly what the space will look like or be. We don't really know if there would be walls or not. So I had planned a installation that would need walls. We got there and there were walls. So I was able to spread some of the work that was on the ground onto the walls, and it became basically a booth.
How'd you get the invite to go to that fair?
Evan Reiser talked to me about it last, like maybe spring or like early spring. And he knew that his gallery would likely have a spot there. And that was it. He applied with my work. And that was that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then other than like obviously manning this booth, because I mean,
I didn't though.
Oh, you just,
of course not.
Who manned it for you?
My gallerists. Which they're not at all my gallerists, because they don't actually represent people. Right. But yeah, they do all of the booth work, all of the meeting people, all of the handshakes and talking about the work. And yeah, so like once I got there installed, I spent some time at the fair, but I generally don't like to spend too much time around my work at the fair, because it's great. You get to talk to a lot of people, but it's just that there's it's pretty high impact, and there's a lot of just direct questions about the work, and it's
right.
Like,
hey, oh, you have a question? Well, like, he's right here.
Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, why don't you talk to my gallerist there? You know, like, and I just, yeah, I generally like to write a statement for each piece, but when I'm like on the ground, I don't love the.
Right.
So tell me about it.
Right.
Like, ah, where do I begin?
Right. You basically turn into a docent for your own work.
So my whole like ethos of images is that I want people to bring more to the work than not that I give them. I try to be like extremely generous in each image in terms of like content and just like ways to go and ways to understand, but I want the viewer to bring a lot to it, and I find that they generally bring more interesting ideas to the work than I can. So,
well, speaking of your work, because the last time I had you on here, we talked a lot more about your background and how you got into photography and how basically where you're at currently as an artist. But one thing I wanted, we didn't get to touch on a lot, was actually what the work that you do, because you know, the work you do is definitely not traditional black and white color photography that, you know, the normal probably intro to photography student at a college would know about. You've definitely grown and deviated off to more conceptual side of photography. Talk about it. How would you describe it? Because it really is unique.
So the way I've been thinking about my work recently is I kind of have these like two big strands. One is the installation stuff, and the other is the book work. And both of them, I think, operate in completely different ways. I generally don't kind of like cross-pollinate the images between the two. But in grad school, I was really focused on a daily practice of work, and that led to a generally smaller scale, a kind of like audience engagement with the work that was based on individual prints, and a like real kind of like intimate engagement with a usually quite tiny object.
Yeah.
It was not until my graduation show that I had to go through all of the steps of having work mounted, framed, and then it really installed in space. And the old Mint Building is like a really weird space. It's
right.
a very strong space.
Right.
A lot of itself too.
Right. And that's where, and so, you know, the Mint Building is basically this old, it's the old, you know, neoclassical type of mm-hmm. building that the old San Francisco Mint used to be in. And so I think when we graduated, the MFA students had, for a couple of years, I think they did it there, but yeah. they had their annual end of their year show, basically, yeah. their showcase.
And architecturally, it's just like, it's a very, just kind of like domineering space.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And it was the first time that I realized that photography is what it is. When you have a camera in the world, you generally point at things. And you can choose to either point at things and say, look, this scene is important in itself and you're like supposed to read this, or it's a more kind of like formal thing that might rely on more iconic or symbolic ideas, and the picture is like a referent to things beyond it.
Right.
Great. In a book, in the context of just the work, that's fine. Once you're in a space, though, it's like it's a completely different.
Yeah.
And I realized that I just had not thought about scale. I had not thought about the encounter between the audience and my work, except in this almost like lap-based reading. And I realized that for my work to like live in the world properly, it had to not enclose itself in individual boxes.
Right.
It had to engage with space
right.
and architecture.
Right. So you took like a sculptural mindset it up to
installation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or an installation like type work.
Hesitant
yeah.
hesitant to use the word sculptural because
because it's more conceptual. So it's not just that. Yeah.
There's frankly like not a whole lot of hands-on work till it's built. There's
right.
a lot of like screen time just like planning out different shapes and forms and combinations of images. But yeah, it's not the most hands-on
right.
thing, and that's why they're all called like post-industrial whatever. Is each piece I'm acting almost like a like project manager working with fabricators who usually do things for trade shows, industrial scale work, and like home furnishings, and trying to get them to meet my higher like technical standards as an artist, and
yeah.
trying to just like basically just like source each piece into existence.
Yeah, and the fact that you use words like industrial, project managing to your work speaks to how different you've taken this photographic medium. Well, and describe to me like your process a little, because they're pictures, they're photographs that you do in studio, but it's when you basically put them on exhibit, it's not on a frame again on hanging on the wall most of
right.
the time. It's actually put together three-dimensionally on like
yeah. So
yeah.
I had always been wanting to put images together in a better way than they like traditionally existed on the wall. I like couldn't quite find a great way to do this. I was like thinking like steel and stuff. But so I was working with Tom Van Houten, who both know from school, and he had just recently done a project using Grutter aluminum, which is again industrial style frame most often used to build lots of like lab related things, like everything from shelves to 3D printer rigs, cut and carve box rigs. And it's just, I've had a hard time dealing with the like actual kind of like materiality of that and its like traditional use, because it is bizarrely, it has these slots that also just make it act as like a perfect picture frame. And so actually it is the more like traditional applications of that stuff made me realize like, oh duh, this thing can stand now. This thing can work on an angle or with corners, or it can receive other things too besides only images.
Mm-hmm.
And it pulled stuff well.
Yeah.
That was not a great
No, well, I mean, you mentioned, you know, it could I mean, basically, you're saying that it comes to life on its own because it's not just a thing on the wall that decorates the wall.
Yes,
you can move it in different places in the space.
It was material I found that, like, once you start to, like, figure out how to use it, it starts to have its own logic. Each piece kind of can lead into the next, and it's got boundaries, it's got rules, it's got, like, proprietary parts that I do not have the metalworking skill to alter. So, like, there are, like, just rules that it's got that I kind of need to play by, but that way it's very kind of liberating to know one's boundaries, and it winds up actually opening up a whole lot more ideas than I thought.
What inspired you to come up, do something this different with your work? Did you see something else that somebody else had done and kind of like took an element of that to your work? Or was this something you just thought of on your own? Just kind of,
I mean, I'm definitely always looking at new photography.
Yeah.
I have recently, in the last like 6 months, I've just like stopped looking at things. or at just trying to keep up with the constant churn.
Right. And why is that? You feel like it was this?
No, frankly, it just depresses me. There's a lot of really good work out there.
Yeah.
And I believe in what I'm working on and
right.
in my work, but I'm easily prone to envy. Sometimes I'm just still blown away. Just like, how the fuck did they think of that? Like, I'm over here working with all the same stuff and like, right. damn.
Yeah.
They saw through this problem to that solution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, holy shit. Like, Anouk Kritoff is one artist who I just like, just blows my mind that we both start in the same picture-based place. And she just ends with these like incredibly goofy, elegant, weird sculptural things that are just great. So I'm always looking at new stuff. There was not one particular like moment where I was like, oh, that's it. It was just like, for that grad show, I was trying to think of like an economical way to get multiple pictures into one frame.
Right.
Besides just like mounting two into one thing. It's just like, I wasn't having the right ideas. I've since seen many very good solutions to that problem. And then I just started to imagine like how I would do it without knowing anything about like the materials I'd use.
Yeah.
And so the first like prototypes were in Evan Reiser's bedroom, which I don't know if he wants me to reveal that's 100% gallery.
Yeah.
But that was like the first time that I was like, okay, I knew what I wanted to do for a show down the road, and I had been thinking about like how am I going to get multiple things into one frame, and then the steel was like not going to work out. It was going to weigh way too much, wouldn't stay on the wall, and just working with Tom Van Houten, it just kind of like led me towards that, and like that's a thing that I try to be very like open to, is that often the third parties that I work with might not know anything about my work, but can provide input that can like really, really change how it's approached. And they can just know just have a completely different insight into a problem than I do. And it usually leads to much more interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, what is like the subject of your photographs? Because it differs, and I'm going to bring up something else later, but explain a little bit.
So, the subject of my photographs, again, depends where they're kind of being made.
Yeah.
In general, they are looking at things that point towards the past, towards ideas from the past.
Yeah.
Images from the past, concepts. And how those things still kind of like live with us now.
Yeah.
So when I'm like working in my studio, it's a lot of usually kind of like mass reproduced objects or like kitsch objects and like postcards and things that refer to a lot of the like big things in the Western imagination, architecture, religion, classical ideals of beauty, and trying to kind of can all of those into one photographic space,
yeah,
and just see what happens there. Mm-hmm. And like, there's times when it doesn't work at all, and there's times when like I can't quite specify like what is this picture about, mm-hmm, but it's like vibrating with a kind of,
mm-hmm,
all of the reference points are working and kind of like, yeah, forming a web of ideas that.
And because you photograph these objects in the studio, but then you put them together, I'm assuming, in Photoshop and stuff is where you So this is all like whatever these images are, it's a backdrop you create, constructed, and then photographed it.
The only times I use like heavy duty digital interventions is like really obvious. Like you'll see like really nasty, like mousy scribbles and things.
Yeah.
I did that for a show in Puerto Rico, like 2 years ago. And I'm actually really hesitant to use Photoshop too heavily because it's one, it's a kind of like photographic territory that Lucas Blaylock wandered into by all of the right ways just through his inherent process.
Yeah.
And it was that digital play was just like never really a part of my work. And so when I do it, it feels kind of forced, and Lucas has like so covered that territory that any new work that's being made in it is only kind of like in reference to him. And So I try to keep it all analog.
Yeah.
In quotes, because it is not a shot on film. Yeah. I also just like, it's such a, the digital intervention thing is like such a hot topic now.
Yeah.
That I just kind of like, I was into it, but I'm trying to like avoid it now because it's something I just don't want my work to get bogged down in this like really like immediate.
Yeah. Yeah, even in my experience, when I was just using film, I just used it to scan the negatives and then basically just retouch photographs.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really it. And I tried like, to be creative with it, but it just was weird.
But like, that's like beautiful thing about Lucas Blaylock's work. You can see like, okay, he shot 8x10, scanned it, did a lot of spotting for dust and shit.
Right.
And one day went, whoops, oh, that's it. That's the thing.
Right.
Like, that's all I need to do. Everything can be re. And frankly, in my work, have not had like aha.
Like, I feel like that was the stepping stone to more new media type work, not necessarily for taking it photography to that next step or whatever. Like, it's not like, you know, whatever it was, like, oh, look at this, I can manipulate this image on Photoshop, but that's not the end all. Like, eventually,
no, it's not, I do think it's important to consider. I teach too,
right?
And like, I still teach how to scan film, it is the mainstream photographic way of working. And so in that way, it is inherently photography, and it's using the tools that were designed specifically for that. It does have a kind of like new media edge, but it is, I think it's like just firmly in the realm of like, look, photography isn't what it used to be 10 years ago. We just need to not cope, but like how can we continue to make art with the tools that.
So you definitely still like the aspect of using your hands in some way to create, because that's really what it is, right? You're the one staging the images, you're the one constructing the back.
Yes, but I will say that it's still there's something still weirdly like alienating about it. I don't know if every photographer feels this way. Sometimes I like have naive, maybe if I just shot large format film, maybe I would be feeling like way more engaged, especially in this past year, which was amazing, but like heavy duty production and a lot of time spent on a screen thinking like, how will these frames work on a wall, how will they work in a space, blah blah blah. And like, my next show I'm making like pinch pots and shit
because
I really need to do something more hands-on, and I'm again just kind of like envious of the people who have such a firm handle on like craft and stuff. And like, I know that the photographic tools are just as much a specialist's realm, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just like giving into the idea that they're like easily accessed by all
these days, and so it's not like a really like hands-on skill, but it's still my work at times still feels kind of like removed from me. And it's a weird.
Well, you know, talk about access to all. The one thing I wanted to bring up is what I like to call the miniature versions of what you do. But on Instagram, because I follow you on Instagram, you sometimes post these pictures, which are basically miniature versions of what you do.
Yeah.
But you put them online. Sometimes they have references to what's going on in society, like the latest ones you put up.
Lately, I just had to get off Instagram. But
sure.
Yeah, but no, they're up there now, yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, talk about that. Like, I mean, those images are basically, to me, I feel like, are original work by you in a different different medium.
Yeah. And to be completely honest, I have not like conceptualized them all that much.
Right.
When I was in grad school, it was like, it was really important to me as just part of a like daily routine of like producing something. It was also about kind of like challenging the Instagram like channel and the like, you know, expectations of what you'll get in an Instagram image.
Mm-hmm.
And I've become kind of wary of it only because it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. Even when you are being like, ha, look at me challenging expectations and trying to insert this weird thing into the like Instagram space and like challenging the like kind of like Instagram just like aesthetic of like the well-filled screen, each one a square, like a lot of white space, lots of like cuts and ruptures and things. But no matter what, you're still basically giving into the desire for likes.
Sure.
And there's somehow like no escaping the platform.
Right.
And even when you're like, look at me, I'm trying to like work against it, you're working within it.
Yeah.
And that's a little microcosmic argument for about a lot artivism and things too. But it's exhausting to try and like push back against when like each new update comes with a like, haha, we've like subsumed your way of trying to work against us into this new app. And look, you can do like a slideshow now or like a whatever. And but I don't know.
Tell me something. Do you like Instagram like itself? Like, do you like the app? Like, it's a fun thing to do, not necessarily like as an art making.
I liked it when it was a fun thing to do. Once I started to realize I was like picking up my phone every 90 seconds to look at the same thing that I had just seen again, that's when I'm like, oh my fucking God, this is.
Yeah. Maybe you got to follow more people now, though, so you get like, new things every second.
You don't want to reduce it to one thing,
right?
But it is ultimately one thing.
No,
and
yeah.
It's a tool for advertisers. It's starting to just feel really icky to me to give that much of my attention because I do believe that we are basically what we pay attention to. We are just accumulations of that. It's a great way to see like what's going on in the art world. Great way to see young image makers do cool things. It's just a great way to access pictures, but it is utterly addicting. I'm sure I'll be back on in a month, but
I think when the guys who created this didn't really think this is a great new way for people to market their brand and market.
Yeah, yeah.
They created it because they thought it was, you can be creative on this thing. It allows everyday person to open this thing up, take a picture and just have fun in creating a cool image, a different color. And it used to, I mean, I remember the first couple of years it was I'm at this park. And then I did some weird, cool, funny thing with it, and it's really artistic.
Yeah.
And some people were doing really artsy stuff, and then all of a sudden it turned into selfies with a filter. It turned into, now I'm a CrossFit person, and I'm just, look at me, do a video of myself doing a squat.
Yes.
And all it is, and you're right, like you mentioned, now it's turned into, what cool thing can I do to get the like?
Yeah, and what you realize, too, is that, like, it's a weirdly like chilly psychological game.
Yeah.
Like no matter what, my picture of my food will always get more like, or cat will always get more likes than what sometimes I hope
that's so
ideally
true.
Could be the most like aesthetically interesting thing you see all day.
Right.
Like, but apparently it's not.
Yeah.
Apparently it's the burger. And it's really weird how even for people who are as visually informed as most people in the art world like to think of themselves,
yeah,
we still all give in to the apparently most likable thing, time. And it's really,
yeah,
I don't, yeah.
Well, it sucks.
Not nourishing.
Well, you're right. It sucks because, I mean, some of the work, the pieces that I mentioned that you put on Instagram are really, I mean, they're good pieces. Like, you know, and it feels like to me they're not just pieces like I'm workshopping an idea,
yeah,
and this is a miniature version. No, that in itself is a piece. When you put it up there, then all of a sudden you start paying more attention to the likes, and you don't like that. I mean, and you just mentioned even earlier about how you don't even like to see other people's work because it's just going to basically get in your head about. But yeah, and it's funny because that mindset for me, like as somebody who played sports too, it's that same mindset where I don't give a shit about what that other guy's doing and he has more passes or more catches than me or whatever. Yeah. I am only focused on what I'm doing and I'm doing the best that I can with what I'm doing. And, and it just ends up being on its own. It will work itself out that whatever I'm doing will, if it's good, it's good.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the other thing I wanted. So one of the things we talk about a lot is your experience in teaching.
Yes.
And like how many classes do you teach?
So I'm teaching my first undergrad course now. For the last 3 years, I was doing adult and continuing ed at SFAI, the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and the UC Berkeley. There's the art studio at the UC Berkeley Student Union. It's a fairly like robust art school there.
Yeah.
And yes, so this spring is my first experience with undergraduates who are actually getting the degree in photography.
Yeah.
And it is in some ways very different than adult ed, and weirdly, in a lot of ways, it's not.
Well, how's that been?
Because
when I hear that, I think about, well, how was I like as a photography student as an undergrad? Yeah.
But like you weren't majoring. Were you?
No, I was. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I had an interesting experience. I was double majoring in photography and history.
Okay.
And then at my senior year, the last semester of my senior year, I found out I was like one class short from graduating, and it was an art class.
Oh, fuck.
And so I was like, is it worth staying an extra semester for that one? So I just changed it to a minor.
Okay.
But I always basically double majored.
Yeah.
And the class was like a writing class. It wasn't even like a photo class. Yeah.
It has its ups and downs, without a doubt. It's really interesting because like you have to, after a couple of weeks, realize that like you have your background and you can kind of only offer what you can, and you can do the best with the context that you can give them. But like as someone who's very, very heavily invested in photography as contemporary art, I've had a hard time figuring out how to engage them because the students are, some of them clearly sort of want to work in that realm as well. Their knowledge of the medium is, for the level that they're in school, it is an advanced course, is a little sparse at times, and it's surprising to me, both in like just the number of artists that they don't know, plus the kind of number of different photographies that they don't know. They really don't know if they want to work in art or like editorial or
be a wedding photographer.
Production or what, because I don't think that they have a good enough sense of the photography landscape to even understand that they're like very distinct worlds.
Yeah.
Once you
so many different paths.
And so it's really fun. It's a lot of work, and I'm just like learning a lot too about like what was I at that age too, which wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
Was I so clueless too? I think so. It's interesting.
Well, what's the trend like? I mean, that's for me. I think that's the other fun part too, is to see these guys. Maybe half of this class could potentially be the future output into the art world.
Yeah, that's
and
like
so.
What, I would hope is,
what are you like, seeing, like trend wise, like
future peers?
Like, are they still just taking portraits and landscapes?
Totally. It's really amazing that undergraduate photography is this like
sort of just like Jungian collective unconscious of like all the same fucking pictures of your friends with a flash against a wall or a dog or you know, some nice arrangement of like bushes with like the light on them.
Right. Here's a girl on a hammock, the light shining the right way.
There's a lot of very nice pictures, but it's interesting that like for the most part they have not really found like their voice. And it's not and a big part of that is just figuring out what they like and what is the kind of pictures that they actually want to see. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are some students who are kind of much more focused on an aesthetic, like and having a distinct kind of eye. I only think of like really one right now. I would expect that by the time they get to their graduation show, that they will be leaps and bounds beyond where they are now. Yeah. And that's cool to watch too. Like when they're that young, like in 14 weeks, like you can really fucking vastly improve and really like just consume a whole lot of like new skills. I'm interested to see in the like final projects for this class when they can do like work in any vein they want instead of needing to do like, you know, film based or digital capture.
Have you shown them your work?
They have seen my work a bit. I'm actually talking about it probably tomorrow. It's the day that we're.
It's like, hey kids, this is Monday. This is the next level right here.
I try not to position it that way. I don't.
Do you love seeing their faces with like how surprised they are? Like, wait, we can do that kind of stuff with this. Well,
but like that's the thing is, my work is obviously vastly different a lot of traditional work. What's weird is that like I just said, where they can't quite recognize distinctions between different photographies.
The different formats.
I think that they might see in my work what I kind of see in my work on like the worst day. Like, oh, you just made a like fucking trade show.
Oh, how fucking weird. Like that.
Great work, idiot. Not subtle at all.
I wonder how many of them are like this guy. Like, I can make real work like a landscape.
What I expected was that there were going to be students that would like make me look like a fool because again, Instagram has some really young kids. It's just like, how the fuck do you, are your technical skills like to such an incredibly refined
Free time
level? Like, it's insane. And that
because they have free time, Nando, and we're working adults that have to pay bills. That's why.
Exactly. That is kind of why.
You're like, well, fuck you. If I had that free time and I lived at home, that'd be great. But no, in all seriousness, I think that's the cool part. I think that would be when you show them more of your work and talk about it. Because, I mean, for me, you know, and this goes back, 10 years ago when I was in school, you know, that's all I knew. Portraiture, landscapes, black and white.
It was also what I wanted to make.
Right.
That's what you wanted.
And then I just remember being told, oh, have you heard of Gregory Crutzen, who at that time in 2005 or 06, that was like his heyday, right? Like that was the shit. And seeing like, wait. He just set this all up like a movie set?
Yeah.
And you're like, you could do that? Oh. And like, I thought it was all about candid shots. Yeah. Like, no. Yeah. You know, and then just seeing how different, and like, how the fuck did he do that?
And what's weird is that, of course, like, you can still, like, it's not a progressivist, like, line of intellectual, like,
no
development. They're different things, but, like, it really is interesting to see, like, most of photography world is still very committed to, like, pictures that generally point at things in the world and want to tell you a story about them. And it's like, leads to lots of nice looking pictures, but like not a lot of, to me, this is like a big part of why I don't do this. This is because I can't approach subjects in this way. I don't think it's an ethical exchange for the photographer to like impose their story on a subject. And that's always what happens. No matter how embedded in that life, there are exceptions like Larry Clark's, Tulsa is a book that works in a very, very traditional documentary way. Yeah. And yet the artist's like subjectivity is almost like removed because he's so subsumed within this world and is such a part of each scene that like doesn't and like gets his ass beat just like the other people in the pictures. And but for the most part, I just find most photography that deals with the world to be dealing with a photographer's fantasies of the world.
Well, what do you think then? So then all the work that we that we've grown up learning about, right? Like Gary Winogrand's work and all, like documentary street photography. I mean, you can say that about all their work, which is true. You know, absolutely, it's objective because it's their view of what they saw. So then how do we address that? Do we just now think of it as like, that was really good work, but here's the downside of that, and now we need to grow more out, like grow and be better than that?
I do think that there are a lot of artists who have made work over the last, whatever, 180 years of photography's existence that, and like Friedlander, Winogrand, Eggleston, sometimes Arbus, not always.
Yeah, because her stuff is like also portraiture.
To me, so, like, they're dealing with photographic perception.
Right.
And that is the subject of all of their work. And I would even say Robert Frank. And so social issues play a role in that, like, their subject matter is there in the picture if you choose to read it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that first and foremost, what makes the work so great is that they're trying to define a way to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Winogrand sometimes gets, there's a lot of like connective tissue that you're supposed to be like, ooh, look at the like state of America at times. Like, I'm thinking of that one in LA where you have like the four women walking down the street and the light is coming through their legs. And then just off to the side, you've got that guy in the wheelchair and that is loaded with a lot of like pathos there. But it doesn't deal with subjects in a way that's like, you're trying to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
You're just dealing with like, what does this picture say?
Mm-hmm.
Not in the, and the picture is almost not connected to the world. It's, mm-hmm. it's own reality that is enclosed from the rest of the world. Friedlander, I think his, Sticks and Stones work, the architecture stuff that's, square format, all shot on a, Hazelette, super wide, so it has these like crazy distortions and things. Like, yes, it's pictures of fences and concrete and walls and wood paneling and all the stuff of like American vernacular building, but it is also about the audience's encounter with this flat black and white thing that in a lot of ways looks nothing at all like the world, and it's own new kind of space.
Right.
And that is, I think, ultimately what their photography is about, way more than Walker Evans is.
Yeah.
Like, look at the plight of the...
So do you think, like, documentary photography has, like, a like a foreign art form that gets put on exhibit at an art museum is kind of, it's kind of outdated at this
super
point? Yeah.
Passe.
Right. Like, if any, I mean, it, like, it's but, more of, like, a more of a news... educational more way of like, here's a picture of something that
I mean,
here's how people used to dress back then.
Right. In a lot of ways, the stuff, the
it's more of a historical context,
like kind of aesthetically stood out in the past.
Right.
I think with time gains a different interest than it had and eventually just gets subsumed in the big old mass of like historical documents.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm trying, like,
well, because I feel the same way. I mean, I do remember being at one point being like, wow, that's great. That's good stuff. You know, like, oh, like, they're beautiful photographs. Yeah. Arbus, Winogrand, all these people that made this work, they are beautifully printed work. And then I think I got past the point where, like, well, that's what they did.
Yeah.
And then I realized as I got older, every time there's a new art show, it's just somebody doing their version of Winogrand, their version of Clark, their version and then I was like, well, does everybody think that fine art photography is just basically that, you know?
Kind of.
Yeah.
That's what I was like weaned on, and I don't know if you got that email from the SF MoMA. It was a survey that was like which of these artists are you familiar with?
Yeah.
And it was like 25 names. There were, I think, 3 women.
Wow.
Everyone else was a white man. Most of them were dead. And then it did kind of like drill downs on like which shows do you want to see? And one was Edvard Munch. Yeah. One was Rauschenberg.
Yeah.
And then one was Walker Evan. And, like, why would you even bother hiring a new photography curator if you're one of your, like, blockbuster photography shows is going to be Walker Evans? How do you expect to move the ball forward on, like, what photography is if every audience that comes in is given these, like, you know, important documents, both socially and aesthetically, but on you have to have a certain love for photography already to engage.
Yeah. Well, and if you're right, when if you love photography, you already already seen all these people's work and shows of their work.
And so, like, for the person off the street that doesn't know anything about photography, that's a very, very poor way to, this is a lame work phrase, but drive engagement. Like, you're not going to continue to have people interested in pictures if you just continue to give them these things that they engage with about as easily as, like, a movie from 1935, which has sound and moves, and most people are like, like, that's glib, but it's like, I think just comes down to that. Like, most are not gonna get it because it's...
You're right. I think there needs to be more contemporary work shown to show people, first of all, how interesting it can be.
Yeah.
Right? It's not all the same stuff. It doesn't all look the same. It's not all black and white. But I do still feel, because as a student of history myself, there is a necessity, I feel like, for people off the street to know, listen, this is how far back this goes. But guess what? In the next gallery, here's what somebody did just last year.
I completely agree. And you saw some smarter photography departments do this in the last couple years. At the Pompidou 2 years ago, there was a Florence Henri show. French, worked mostly through the 20s to like 40s. Woman, best friends with all the like surrealists and like all of the big painters. And she was doing these still lifes then that look like they came out of like a graduate studio like last week. And Barbara Kasten too. Like there's stuff back, but there's plenty of material back there that we can use to better understand the moment in pictures now.
Yeah.
But most curators choose not to because they, it's a thing when I teach too, like I'm very wary of relying on like the giants as all of the,
as like the references. Yeah.
Because like the fact is when you teach the stuff and need to frame the canon and frame how it's understood, you start to like understand like, oh, holy shit, this work is incredibly important and did all of these things. But like there's always someone out there being overlooked or underlooked at. And,
Well, I think, I mean, it goes, you know, I guess it goes down to the teachers, right? They rely on them. I mean, a lot of times it's on them to like, hey, you know, when you show a picture of Richard Avedon's work, outline all the cool stuff he did. But I think the most important thing is making sure your students don't just copy what he did. You know, being sure, like, I don't want to see work just like Richard Avedon's. I'm showing you this just so you understand the basics of what a portrait photograph is and how it can look beautiful. But now, but here's somebody in the last couple of years who took it a step further.
Yes.
And did something different. And I want you to take that a step further.
But while also understanding, too, that, like, while Avedon was working, I mean, this is kind of a bad reference point, but, like, so was Mapplethorpe.
That's a good point.
Both giants.
Right.
But, like, Mapplethorpe is definitely still, like, the, like, weirder of the two. And produced just as important work in a lot of ways, just as technically and aesthetically.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Refined, too.
Yeah.
Just completely different subject matter that's a little harder to teach to students these days in a world of, like, trigger warnings. And
you're right. I think it's art historians maybe dig a little bit deeper of seeing who else was around at that same time, not just the big names that we just know.
And art historians generally do better than photography historians. So
yeah,
sadly.
All right, well, dude, like, what do you have coming up next?
A couple things I don't want to talk about yet because I don't know if I'll actually get them or not.
Okay,
we won't jinx it. But I am working on a portfolio box for the SF Art Book Fair.
Yeah.
Speaking of Mapplethorpe, my only like portfolio box reference points are his XYZ boxes, which are like so gorgeous.
Yeah. But,
like, I'm feeling timid about my box because this is not going to ignite a new battle in the like culture wars. But so yeah, that's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. It's like not quite the book stuff, but is still a much more kind of like hands-on experience. And then have a show at Interface Gallery in October.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, that's and I'm kind of like working with a lot of the same stuff I've been working with in the past for that. I want to introduce some new things that I've been playing with and trying to think through. So
all right, well, cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on again to the podcast.
My pleasure.
It was nice having you.
This was fun. I hope I didn't.
No. This is good. This is what I want to do. Yeah, just want to know. This is great. No, hey, it's your opinions, and I love to hear them, and I want people to hear them.
Good. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks again to Nando for coming on again. If you want to learn more about Nando and his work, visit his website at nandoalvarezperez.com or follow him on Instagram at nando.eternity. You can also check out photos of the work we discussed on the Art Scene Podcast website at artscenepc.com. Lastly, you can listen to past episodes of the podcast on Apple Podcasts or SoundCloud. All right, till next time, everyone.